The Gentle Dentist continues to hear compliments from their patients.
I am so glad we found the Gentle Dentist. It is truly pain-free. Not just for me, but I'm so happy my children have had such a wonderful experience. They love the Smile Club.
I'm a business owner, so every minute of my time is valuable. I love that they are so respectful of my time.
The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call now. New patients receive a free sonic toothbrush with a cleaning and exam. Call 614-431-3311.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers. And Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Couple of 2-0 teams, surprising clubs. I didn't expect to have great starts, but they're there. We got some new sweaters that were being modeled in and around the National Hockey League on this opening week, and we got our first weird, crazy finish already.
Break up the Bruins and break up the Penguins. I mean, who would have thought? Particularly Pittsburgh. I think lots of people have Pittsburgh finishing 32nd in this league this year, and all of a sudden, you know, Artur Shilov's, stole a game at Madison Square Garden, and Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin combined for a goal in the home opener as they salute Malkin, Crosby, and Letang in Nashville Predator sweaters.
Oh. Yeah, those jerseys do look very Predator-ish.
Yes,
a little bit of a throwback to the old Penguin days. I can see the tie-in there. It's not all.
Well, they
Nashville,
never wore. They wore yellow for a couple of years, but they were in the classic Pittsburgh style. This is a new style. You know, they look cool. I probably would want one in my closet as a as for some fun, but they look a lot like Nashville.
It's sort of like San Jose. A little bit of Anaheim.
Yeah.
The color's not bad on its own. But when you do helmet and pants and everything else, it's too much yellow, it's too much teal, it's too much orange.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned San Jose. What do you think Alex Nedeljkovic is thinking today?
If you haven't seen it, check out the end of the Golden Knights and San Jose Sharks. Vegas is trailing by a goal late, and Jack Eichel flips a puck in, trying to get a faceoff, and it takes a hard left bounce and beats Nedeljkovic from center ice. And then in overtime, he comes charging out to make a play to avoid a breakaway and gives up the puck, and it ends up being...
But did he have a choice? In your opinion, did he have a choice not to come out?
Oh, he could have just faced the breakaway.
Right. So, I mean, it was either he had to do it and time it perfectly, or there was going to be, Riley Smith was going to have a breakaway.
He's arguably the best puck handler in the National Hockey League for a goaltender. Yeah. There's a few guys that are good, but he's right up there. He scored goals.
He scored for Pittsburgh last year in Buffalo.
Scored the American Hockey League, scored the ECHL. Yeah. He's done it all.
My heart breaks for a guy who's playing his first game for a new team. And the Eichel goal was bad enough. And then this one just was...
And in between, he made a 10-beller in overtime. Oh,
yeah, I know. Hey, speaking of goalies, we got Joe Bowen today.
Good old-time goaltender. I battled him in the old Unionville Men's Hockey League when I lived in Markham. Yeah.
Who won?
We usually sawed it off. He had better players.
So not every you lost.
Yeah. He had better play. You know, I did play in a Leaf alumni game with Joe. One time we played Detroit. Marcel Dion ran me behind the net. I punched Marcel. Not proud of it, but he ran me.
That's why he doesn't like you. That's why Dion doesn't like you.
No, it's true. I still don't talk to him. And I froze him out. I froze Marcel Dion out from my personal group. But Joe played the first period of that game and was outstanding. I was so happy for him. He was great in that game, and loves the position and is one of the more personality driven play by play people in the game today. There used to be more of Joe's in the past, but he's going to wrap up his career this year.
Last year as the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it's what a better time to have Joe on to discuss his career, his life, and his approach to the game. He's one of a kind. You're right. There's no other Joe Bowens in the National Hockey League anymore.
I'll give you a toonie if you say Holy Mackinac.
No, I'm not saying a Holy Mackinac. That's Joe's line, not mine.
Okay, you say like, Holy Mackinac, here's Joe Bowen.
No, you can do that.
Holy Mackinac, Joe Bowen's coming up on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
The Gentle Dentist continues to hear compliments from their patients.
I am so glad we found the Gentle Dentist. It is truly pain-free. Not just for me, but I'm so happy my children have had such a wonderful experience. They love the Smile Club.
I'm a business owner, so every minute of my time is valuable. I love that they are so respectful of my time.
The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call now. New patients receive a free sonic toothbrush with a cleaning and exam. Call 614-431-3311.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
I don't know what I'm saying is ever going to reach the world, because John Shannon's in charge of the technical side of this recording with Joe Bowen. So Joe, you can basically say whatever you want and nobody may hear it. So you could be as controversial, as hot take as you want.
That's a little dangerous. Yeah. People have lost their jobs because of that kind of output. I think I will try to be as guarded as I can. Thank you. But thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. This
is, by the way, this isn't Joe Bowen, because that was very diplomatic. And
yes. And that's true.
And I know Joe Bowen.
Well, that's only in the boardroom, though, Johnny. That's only in the boardroom.
That's right.
He is the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, for those that are not familiar with that tone and delivery. So this is an emotional year for you. How do you go into this campaign, and how is it different?
I think you cherish each night. I'm going to be able to see a lot of the people that I've kind of rub shoulders with over the course of the years, who will be coming through Scotiabank Arena to say hello. So I think that's possibly the one thing that will be, you know, each night you're kind of, you know, a little chip off the granite is going to kind of go, I guess, if you will. But I'm looking forward to it. I know it's time. I'm quite content with the decision that I've made. And I'm glad that it's my decision and not someone like Shannon walking in the door and tapping me on the shoulder and saying, you know what, buddy, we just about had enough of your act, so let's go. So, and I think that's the way I wanted to do it.
Just for the record, we've also made the decisions on our own, but they weren't really on our own. Want to make that point.
Good. All right, good. Well, as long as we're all on the same boat.
No, yeah. By the way, I never made the decision on my own. They got to put me in a wheelbarrow and get me out of Dodge. So how long have you been thinking about this, Joe?
Over the last couple of years, I think, John, the landscape has changed. We don't travel to road games, and that had an effect in it, I think. But, you're your own worst critic. And I know I'm not doing it as well as I did. I'm 74 years of age. I've had a wonderful run at it. And I just thought, this is as good a time as any. Some young person is going to slide into this chair next year, and under the current format, it's going to be the greatest job in the world that they could possibly get. It wasn't what I kind of signed up for, but that is just a piece of it. Most of it is just your own reflection on how you've done the job, how things have gone. And I'd like to spend some time with my grandkids and do some traveling and stuff like that while I'm still able to do so. So I think it's a great time to do it. And we're going to win the Stanley Cup this year, and it's all going to be a big parade, and everybody will be happy.
Well, as long as they get Jim Ralph to be the master ceremonies at the parade.
Well, there's that.
Joe, by the way. Good for Joe for going all in on – remember I said he could say whatever he wanted?
Yeah, he did.
He just did.
So you talked about a young guy taking over the job. You were a young guy once taking over the job. Did you envision it ever lasting this long?
Oh, God, Johnny. I was just hoping to get through game one.
By the way, the game one was who other than the Leafs, who was playing?
We were in the old Chicago Stadium.
Oh, wow. What a great place to start.
It was. It is still to this day my favorite venue. But I got in a cab with the largest man I'd ever seen, I think, driving a cab. And he started down West Madison Street. I'd never been there before, and we're going, as you know, then that was the toughest part of Chicago. Yeah. And I thought to myself, I'm going on my last ride, and I'm never even going to get to do my first game. But then that mausoleum came out of sight. I saw the stadium for the first time. But when I got to the rink, I walked up the 97 stairs you had to go up to get to the broadcast position. Sat there, and the engineer that we had couldn't get us on the air. It was a Bell line. There was problems or whatever. I had scripted out what I wanted to say to kind of welcome myself to the position, taking over for Ron Hewitt and everything else. And we didn't get on the air till literally when the puck was coming out of the official's hand, and he just pointed at me to go. So all of that stuff that I had prepared, that went out the window, and game on. And I don't know if it was the right way to do it, but it probably sounded better because I'm probably sure I would have been hemming and hawing, and my voice would have been cracking about the excitement that I had of having this opportunity. So, that was 1982. That's a long time ago. And, it was a very special time. And I was just hoping to get through one game. And
I can't imagine going to gate 3.5, which is what they had at Chicago Stadium. Yep. Gate 3.5.
Why they named that I have no idea. But that was famous.
It was at the end of the building, so it was halfway between the north side and the south side. So it made sense. So, but a little different than the Sudbury Arena.
Oh God, yeah. and the booth that we had. The press box, of course, was at one end of the building, but right behind the net. But we were up in a broadcast position up higher than the TV guys would have been. And it was literally suspended from the ceiling with tie rods or whatever. And when that anthem started, that thing was like a tuning fork. And it started to vibrate. And you would kind of look up and make sure the bolts we're still holding out up in the ceiling because you kind of thought this thing is going down. It was crazy. The atmosphere in that building was unparalleled. And when they did close it, one of the great signage that was in up in the upper deck was, never mind the view, never mind the roar, remember the view. Because they went from, what, 21,000 seats, zero private boxes, to 22,000 seats, 200 private boxes. And that guy's position up in the corner was not going to be anywhere near what it used to be.
Joe, how did you get the job?
Well, Alan Davis, who went on to great things with sports radio, not only in Toronto, but in Seattle and then in Buffalo, he was a good friend of mine in Halifax. Mm. And he ended up chasing a young lady's skirt to Toronto and ended up marrying her, and they've had a wonderful life together. And he was working at CKFH, and he sent me a note in April that Ron Hewitt was going to go into radio sales and leaving the position. So send my stuff in. And I'd sent it all over the league like everybody else does and whatnot. And I have a wonderful, nice little letter from Cliff Fletcher, then of the Atlanta Flames, telling me that he had put it into a spot, which I assumed was the garbage can. But anyway, I still have the letter, which is kind of nice. And he said, you know, send your stuff in. So I did, and never heard anything. And in the summer, my wife and I, we loved Halifax, and we decided we were going to buy a house. So in September, the mortgage came due on Wednesday. Everything was good. 22 points on the dollar, too, Johnny.
Oh, I know. Interest rates in the early 80s. People don't know what they were missing.
No, they have no idea. 22 points on the dollar, 1982. Wednesday, I'm happy. I come home from doing the morning show with my very good friend, Mike Cranston. And the phone rings, and it's I answer it. And, hi, this is Len Bramson, Telemedia Sports in Toronto. We've been listening to your audition tape. We would like you to come to Toronto to do the exhibition game with the Leafs and the Oilers as an audition. Now, I'd read in the paper that this thing was up to two guys from out west, and I didn't have any opportunity. And I thought it was Alan Davis. And I went into a diatribe cursing and swearing Alan for trying to yank my chain about something that is not happening. And I'm
this is to the person that was on the phone with you, inviting you in?
This is to the late, great Lenny Bramson.
Yes.
This is to the person offering you the audition.
Yes, this is my first conversation. And I'm calling him and this, that, and everything else. And when I finally came up for air, Len says, Joe, no, this isn't Alan Davis. This is Len Bramson. And then I turned into Jackie Gleason. Humma, 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 humma. And he said to me, I said, this great introduction, but we'll phone you back with plain information and all of this. And I hung the phone up and I went to grab a sharp knife. I thought, you idiot. Here's your one chance, and you have just, I mean, you've destroyed this. I would have slipped my wrists, I think. But instead of 20 minutes, he phoned me back in about 10. He said, Joe, we've listened to your tape again. That was the most interesting conversation I've ever had of hiring somebody and having them to tell me to take my job and shove it before I even offered the job. And he said, we don't need the audition. Fly in, we'll sign the contract. And I am living proof you can tell your boss to go stuff it and still end up getting the job. So I wouldn't recommend it.
I did that and lost my job, Joe. So it's
No, lots of people have done it the other way, Johnny. And rightly so in many occasions, right? Rightly so. But no, that was kind of a unique thing. And every time we had a meeting or anything else when we were sitting down and Len Bramson would be there, he said, Joe, do you have anything to say to me before we start? And we would laugh and then on we would go. He was a tremendous individual. He had a vision about radio that I wish was still in place, of building a network using the the dollars from national sponsors to provide free broadcasts to various. We had a network of 23, 24 stations. Mm-hmm. And then they would get free programming and then be able to sell half of the inventory through the course of that. So between that and the Blue Jays and everything else that Telemedia had, it was quite a run. It was great.
Do you have a preference, radio or television? Other than the money? Other than the money?
My bank manager does. Yeah, my bank manager does. Well, you know what? When you're doing two TV, idiots like you are telling you what to do.
Yeah.
When you're doing radio, you're the producer, director, and whatever the hell goes on.
No, hold on. Finish the sentence properly. When you're doing radio, you're the idiot.
I suppose if I backtrack, that would be accurate. Yes. No, actually, I work with the idiot, Ralphie. I'm the producer, director, and everything else. So it is different. It's probably much easier to do radio because that's what you're doing. And you're trying to paint a picture, so your call is different. You try to elaborate a little more of exactly where the puck is. One of the greatest compliments that I get through the course of my career is that, Joe, we can sit at home and we know where the puck is. We know where everything is because you're very graphic at doing that. Sometimes that kind of a call, and we've seen it change so much over the years as far as television, mm-hmm. television becomes more of a conversation than play-by-play. It's information. It's this and that and this because you can see what's going on, obviously. So the days of Bob Cole and myself doing TV are kind of archaic, I guess, because it's the style how we actually broadcast. And that's changed over the course of the years. And you can see it continually changing more into a group of people having conversation while the play is actually on, that in the old days, viewers or listeners would go, Jesus, shut up. Will you do some play-by-play here so we know who has the damn pucks? But that's a different style.
By the way, I think more people would like it your way than the other way, Joe.
Yeah, I'll just jump in there. I find that the storytelling has seeped way too much into the radio side in the games.
And TV side, it's
but radio. I need to know where the puck is. I don't need stories on radio.
And that's, you know what? And Jimmy and I get lots of stories in when the play is stopped.
Yes,
we try to have a lot of fun with each other. When I work with so many great people. And Mike Cranston, who I did morning radio with in Sudbury and in Halifax, was a wonderful teacher to not be afraid of the microphone. You're trying to entertain people. And when you're doing a hockey game, not every game is game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. Wait a minute. Come to think of it, I've never done a game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. Anyway, I digress. So you have to entertain people and make them have fun with you while you are still trying to make sure that you do your job of what they're trying to listen to. And that is where the puck is, who's got it, what's going on, what's the score, and all of that stuff. So I think you try to walk that line a little bit and you try to be as graphic as you can. And yet, you know what? They're not all Rembrandts. There's a lot of Picassos. And some of them, you've got 2.5 hours to fill. And this isn't pretty what you're trying to listen to because they're getting their doors blown off or the home team is not doing well. So it's a bit of a fine line to walk, but I think we've tried to do it as best we can.
Yeah, there are a lot of listen, in the 42, 43 years you've been doing the Maple Leafs, there's a lot of paint by numbers. And, you know, the challenge I think you had for a long time in a couple of segments was the team wasn't very good. The team was not very good. And how did you manage
the 80s? Yep, absolutely.
I mean, how many times can you really be complimentary to Mike Nikolic and Doug Carpenter? Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that those weren't fun times, Joe.
No, they weren't. And you also had to understand and walk the fine line that if you're going to get up on your soapbox and carve them, they're probably going to carve you right out of the picture too. So you had to walk a bit of a fine line. And you know as well as I do, Johnny, producing television at that time. and Harold had the speed line right into the truck. So if he didn't like something, guess who's getting the first phone call and it coming in a hurry?
Did Harold ever to pull you aside and talk to you about things?
Me?
Yeah.
You know what? No. Hmm. No. I don't think I ever had... I don't think I ever got on his bad side.
That's because Hodge did all the dirty work for you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, TV was so much more important. Yes, exactly.
Harold would sit there and yell and say, I've got an axe. I'm coming out to cut the cables.
Yeah. Well, the other thing was that when I was on the road walking around a lot of time, Harold never had any money in his pocket, right? Never had a dime. And when he wanted to get an ice cream in St. Louis, sometimes I'd be there and he'd spot me a 10 spot here. I got to get some ice. Of course, he shouldn't have had it because of his diabetes and everything. Yeah. And here I am, you know, helping the owner out. Never did get repaid for any of that, but that's besides the point.
Let's take a break.
No, I just,
let's just pause
before,
here.
Hold on before we go. And then there was King Clancy.
Oh, what a gem. What a gem. I miss him. Yeah. He was as unique a human being, I think, as you could ever have met. I wish I had been able to watch him play, because I can imagine that he played with the same enthusiasm and gusto and everything else that he brought. And he was the guy that kept Harold somewhat moving in the same direction and the right direction.
Can you, if you were able to bring King Clancy back to 2025 and show him what the Maple Leafs are and show him what, you know, Scotiabank Arena is and Maple Leaf Square and what the hockey team means to the city now compared to when he and Harold were a mom and pop show.
And then take him into the accounting department and show him what the bottom line is. Can you imagine? King, never mind. He would have had the coronary right there. Boom. Yeah. That would have been it. Are you kidding me? Wow.
We'll pick up on that as we continue on 100% Hockey with Joe Bowen chatting with Millard and Shannon.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
What do you miss about the Harold Ballard era? Not the performance on the ice, but just how you guys did things and how the game operated.
I don't know as I miss anything, to be honest with you, Darren.
You miss Gardens?
Hey?
You miss the Gardens?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah. No, but he's asking about
whether
I miss Harold.
Yeah.
yeah. No. People ask me, what's your favorite call? And I always jokingly say, well, I haven't made it yet. And I'm hoping that maybe that will be this year as well. But if I had to ask or give you one from my career, I would say it was Nicky Borishevsky's goal in 93. And the reason for that was as much Harold as it was Nicky scoring the goal and then what transpired through the rest of that magical run in 93. It was a watershed, Mark. There was no chance that this team was going to be competitive enough to win a Stanley Cup when Harold was running it because of the way he did run it. And God bless him. It was his toy. It was his thing. And he could do with it whatever the hell he wanted. But by that point in 93, the ownership had changed. And from that point, you could never say they weren't trying to win it. Now, we haven't done it, obviously, but it hasn't been for the lack of coaching, front office staff, scouting, player development, anything. I mean, they have poured money into this franchise more than maybe any other team in the National Hockey League. So the effort is there. The results aren't, but that's, only one team wins it, and that's, whatever you can do. But that goal was a watershed mark, and you just felt, okay, we've turned the page. They're going to really take a run at this and try to do as much as they can. And, of course, we had those two great runs back-to-back going to the semifinals and didn't quite make it. But that I really didn't have a thing with, saying – about Harold one way or the other after that.
And then there was Pat Quinn.
Yeah. I'll never forget the first practice we had at training camp, which was held in Hamilton that year. I'm standing the boards or whatever. And Pat, who I'd known for a number of years, he walked up to me and he said, "You know what? There's a hell of a lot more talent here than I've been led to believe." And that was personified by a young Czech defenseman that was drafted 247th or something like that. And Thomas Kaberle makes the hockey team. And it's another page that just got flipped right over. And Pat had tremendous success through the course of his tenure here in Toronto.
Everybody that's been around the game, followed a team, thought, this is our year. And as it goes along, you're like, you're convinced we're going to break through. Was there one year in particular where you thought it's going to happen?
You know, the year that we had all of the injuries with Pat, and I remember a bunch of the Marlies were up and we ended up playing in Carolina, and a couple of them came up to me and said, "Do you have to play in the Stanley Cup final to get your name on the cup?" And I said, "I'm pretty sure that's the way it works." But we had so many guys from the Marlies play integral roles while guys were getting, and Matt Sundin was the main one, getting back and being healthy. And then all of a sudden, I think it was, thank God, all of the big guys are back. Let's let them do it. And we didn't quite get it done. But
1999.
Yes.
Going to the conference final in 99, and you're playing Buffalo.
Yep.
And then they announce 5 minutes before the first game that Dom Hasek isn't going to play.
Yeah. Oh, no. Giddy up.
Giddy up.
Yeah. Giddy up. And the Sabres, in full marks, did a wonderful job. And that was the year that upper body, lower body.
That's right.
Started the next year because of an article in the Toronto Sun about Steve Thomas and his shoulder being shot up and various other things. I mean, Johnny, I've been a Boston Red Sox fan since 1967. So that was 84 years, I believe, is the number when they finally pulled the plug and went down 3-0 to the Yankees and rallied back with the famous four nights in October. And what were the Cubs, 109 years?
Something like that.
I mean, by comparison, this is still in its infancy to some extent. But the whole thing about sports is there's just no guarantees. There really isn't. And, you have to enjoy the ride each year in order to, you know, sustain that. And they're sort of like your kids. You're going to yell and scream at them, and you're going to be really upset with them. And you're going to say, I may not talk to you for a day, but you're never going to stop loving them. And I think any attachment to a sports team that you are actually going to invest yourself dictates that that has to happen. And it's always fun to see the Super Bowl champions win and all of a sudden, oh, yeah, I've just become a Kansas City Chief fan. Well, good for you. I mean, yeah, way to get on the bandwagon. Make sure you got a hold of those horses right away. You gotta feel some hurt before you can really celebrate.
Gilmore, Sundin, Matthews, Marner, the greatest Leaf you've seen play. Who would it be?
Johnny Bauer.
Other than a goaltender, because I know where your heart is, Joe.
No, but John, I was being walked by my dad while I was fussing. Apparently, listening to Foster tell us that Bill Barilko had scored the goal,
51.
So that's a few years ago. I mean, if you're going to ask me best player that I've watched that I broadcast,
yeah.
And do you want career or do you want small?
I want the guy that comes to mind first.
Doug Gilmore's year in 93 was unparalleled. I mean, he literally, on a very small body, just put the entire city on his shoulders and said, come with me, we're going on a magical ride. Mm-hmm. And it ended up kind of falling when a certain official couldn't decide whether Gilmore had been hit with a stick or the puck or whatever. And I digress. But I think the greatest player that I've seen over a career was Matt Sundin. I think Austin Matthews is probably going to maybe leap into that number one spot before his career is over. But I won't be broadcasting the rest of his goals after this year. But it's been a pleasure doing the work with him up to this point. But I mean, Matt Sundin was just a tremendous, tremendous player.
So that's the favorite player to have a career. Who is your favorite, like, just dude, person that you got to know, out with?
I'd have to say Wendell Clark.
Yeah.
You couldn't help but fall in love with the way he played. And the best part was going out west and having Les and Elma Clark drive in from Kelvington to wherever we happened to be playing and having to sit in the pregame skate and listen to Les give us an hour and a half dissertation about the plight of the Canadian farmer. And then we would walk out into the parking lot and Les would crawl into the largest, the newest, the biggest pickup truck that had been built that year. And I would yell at him. I said, Les, it doesn't look like you're doing too bad.
And grain prices have really dropped.
Oh, yeah. And he would laugh and off. They would go. But Wendell was, I'll never forget. He's when the first interview that I did with him, I asked him a question and he would, well, you know, and then, well, you know, well, you know, well, mm-hmm. you know. And I said, I stopped the tape machine. I said, Wendell, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you the damn question. Just take a deep breath and get on with it. But I don't want to hear, well, you know, anymore. And he laughed and we had a lot of fun with that. But he was just so spontaneous. And I'll give you one story that was just classic Wendell and classic Clark family. We're in Chicago and a brawl breaks out on the ice. And for some ungodly reason, Wendell's not involved in it, even though he's on the ice. Must have been Bob McGill and somebody else. Off they went. Anyway, Steve Smith, rather large defenseman playing for the Blackhawks, is standing beside Wendell and must have made the mistake of saying, do you want to go or something? But there was, Wendell never discussed. There was never any banter and then the fight. You were in the fight before you even knew you were in the fight, because Wendell got the first three or four in, usually to get things started. Well, Wendell has him down on the ice with one knee on one shoulder, one on the other, and he's just piston drop. And he would stop because the officials were all over at the other end of the rink, and he'd look, and then he'd start again, and then he'd look, and then he'd start again. Well, you can imagine the mess that Steve Smith was in. So anyway, after the game, we come down the 97 stairs from our broadcast position, and the players would come up from the basement where the dressing rooms were underneath the ice, and Les and Elma are there. They made the short 23-hour drive from Kelvington. So, and up comes Wendell, and then we were talking and whatnot. There is this shriek from the other end of the building. It's Mrs. Smith screaming at Wendell for beating up her son. And Elma, who's a big old farm girl from Saskatchewan, and I go, oh, this is going to be interesting. And she's screaming, and Elma just quietly grabs Wendell's hand and says, Wendell, did you hurt your hanny in the game tonight? And Mrs. Smith just did a 180 and headed in the other direction.
And the legend continues to grow.
Now, did you call Bruce Bell, the Clark check behind the net with Bruce Bell?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And Rick Walmsley had a great part in that. Walmer's playing goal, and he doesn't see Clark either, right? And he's yelling at Bruce Bell, wheel with it, wheel with it, wheel with it. Well, he wheeled with it, and Clark leveled him. And then the next thing out of Walmer's, freeze it, freeze it, freeze it. Freeze it. He was frozen. Completely illegal now, right? He left his feet about the goal line, and poor Bruce Bell took the brunt of that hit. But that was vintage Wendell, though, right? I mean, he was playing a 6'7" mindset in a 5'10" body that oftentimes wouldn't hold up to that kind of abuse. But boy, he sure put it through it. He left every inch of it on the ice, and that's one of the reasons he's probably my favorite.
Yeah, and let's face it, through those years, the Leafs didn't have much to cheer for, but they had Wendell.
Yes, they did. You're absolutely right. Yep.
Wendell might have saved the franchise in so many ways. Oh,
absolutely. I mean, Bob McGill, Wendell just said, who's the toughest guy in training camp? And Bob McGill and him fought, I think, 5 times at training camp. you get two guys yelling at one another at training camp now, and it's front page news on the sports, right?
Yeah.
Never mind that. We got guys brawling here in training camp before.
Yeah. Hey, did you ever meet Foster?
Foster? Once. When I was here in 82, there was a press conference or a luncheon of some sort, and he was there, and I met him. He was very cordial and congratulated me and everything else. It was very special. Danny Gallivan was extraordinarily nice. I had met him when I was working in Halifax, and when I got to Montreal for my first game there, he made a point of coming up to me and Joe, and I thought, God, how could he remember me? I mean, I was just this little reporter in Halifax, but he was I hated the man, of course, because he did the Montreal games. But
well,
you couldn't
except his last TV career was he, you know, we put Danny in position to do Maple Leaf regional games.
Yes.
In the 84-85 season after Bill had his medical issues. And Danny actually, is one of his last games he called was a Maple Leaf game.
Yeah. Oh, he was an absolute, he was a wonderful, wonderful individual. He was so nice. He and Dick Irvin were so complimentary and so nice to me when I first started. It was a great way to have heroes of yours to, you know, make mention of you. It meant a great, great deal.
Members of the audience that may not know, where did Holy Mackinac come from?
My dad. My dad, I would be young. He was a goalie. I ended up being a goalie. Johnny Bauer was our hero and idol. And we'd be watching the games, and I'd be sitting on his lap sometimes, and Johnny would make a great save, and my dad would blurt out, "Holy Mackinac, what a great save by Johnny Bauer," whatever, Johnny. And my dad passed away when I was 14, and I never used it through 7 years of junior hockey with the Sudbury Wolves and 3 years in Halifax. I was probably 4 or 5 years into my Leaf tenure because Bill Waters was with us again in the Chicago Stadium. It's, we've had a bunch of things in that building. And Felix Potvin made a great save, and I blurted it out. And I would probably never have used it again, but I looked over and Wilbur had fallen off his chair. He was laughing so hard. I thought, well, if I got that rise out of him, maybe we could have some fun with it. And we have, and we've made T-shirts and whatnot, and in support of leukemia research and hospital for sick kids and whatnot. So hopefully it's not only been somewhat of a signature call, but it's at least done some good work too.
Okay, so let's get to the important stuff. How the hell did you become a Green Bay Packer fan and a Notre Dame fan?
Well, first off, like I said, I've been a Red Sox fan since 67 when they had the miracle, the impossible dream season. Mm-hmm. The very first football game, and I can remember this, I think we were in Atlanta, Georgia, visiting my uncle, and I heard Ray Scott say, "Dowler to the left, McGee to the right," and it was the Green Bay Packers.
Sure.
But Johnny, when I was a kid, we got one game, right? We got the CBC game in Sudbury, and because the Packers were winning through the 60s, they were on TV, and they became my team. I became a Green Bay Packer fan, and the thing that really resonated with me was the fact that Green Bay was no bigger than Sudbury,
right?
Right. It's just little northern paper town, the toilet paper capital of the world in Wisconsin. And they're taking on the New York football Giants, and they're kicking the stuffing out of them. And I thought, how good is that? And so I've been a Green Bay fan. When they announced that they were building a Hall of Fame, I sent in my $50 and I have a metal business card that allows me free entrance to the Green Bay Packer Hall of Fame because I was an initial donor to the event. That was back in probably in the 70s. And I became a huge, huge Green Bay fan. My dad, we're Irish. My dad was a great Notre Dame football fan. And do you remember Lindsey Nelson's?
I was going to say, you're more Lindsey Nelson than Ray Scott. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Lindsey Nelson used to have the Notre Dame football highlights.
Sure, every Sunday morning.
That's right. And we would make sure that we sat and watched that. And really, the only time you got to see Notre Dame play live was one of the bowl games. And they were in a lot of the bowl games. My dad never got to go to Notre Dame to go down and see the campus and whatnot. I started taking my kids 29 years ago, I guess. We go every year somewhere to see them play. We're going to get my grandkids involved in this tradition as well. It's just been a very special family bonding thing between the Packers and Notre Dame. And, of course, when they gave us the opportunity to become owners, I had to make sure we each got a share. So I control 5 shares of the Green Bay Packers. So I consider myself to be the controlling interest owner of the team because of that. And the problem was, though, that when I phoned Jerry Jones to borrow the airplane, He never phones back, the SOB. I mean, really, we're in this big club of owners, and you'd think mm-hmm. you'd get a little respect, but we don't.
He gave you Parsons.
I had to okay that deal. He did phone that time, and I said, you know what? Oh. I think he's okay. We'll take him off your hands. Yes. Oh. Not bad.
Well, hey, who's your favorite goalie?
Other than Bauer.
Who's my favorite goalie?
Yeah. Who do you call that you loved?
I didn't call any of his games. I loved Glenn Hall because of the way he played, how different he was. And literally Glenn Hall is what you see now, right? Yeah. The butterfly, the athleticism, the agility and all of that, as opposed to stand up play angles and everything else. In the Leaf net.
Because he had some great characters and good goaltenders.
Oh yeah. Curtis Joseph was, one of my very favorite people, not only as a goalie, but as a person, and how much I enjoyed, watching him and him playing, Felix Potvin, because of the one night we found out that he could actually fight was special. I was scared to death. I thought, oh my God, he's going to get killed. Then we found out, hey, he could really throw him. And so did Ron Hextall that night too. So, and of course, Jim Ralph, is one of my all time favorite goalies that didn't quite make it either.
Yeah. I tell you what, there's going to be a group of people under the age of 35 that are listening to this podcast saying, all Joe likes to talk about is fights.
Well, you know what?
The game, Johnny, has changed so much.
Yeah. Well, when I was in Halifax, I did a lot of fights. In fact, I did in Las Vegas, I did Trevor Burbick and Larry Holmes.
Really?
And I broadcast Muhammad Ali's last fight. Trevor Burbick fought him in Nassau in the Bahamas, and I was ringside with Don Chevrier.
Wow.
Doing that fight. So, yeah, I have a soft spot in my heart for the guys that climb into the ring with those gloves on, only because you couldn't drag me in there to try and do that.
You still playing over at the Unionville Men's Hockey League?
You know what? I stopped the Unionville Men's League about 5 or 6 years ago.
You did.
The idiots are going to have a roast for me in November, which will be fun. I played with a bunch of old farts over at Centennial up until last Christmas time. And I looked at myself. I would see the, you know, I'm flopping around like a dead seal trying to play goal and then trying to get back up on my feet. Meanwhile, play would go on and two of the old farts would collide with each other at center ice. Stop the game. We all go over, help them up, dust them off, make sure everybody's okay. Meanwhile, I'm down there flopping around. No one's coming to help me. And I'm going, you know what? Your hips and your shoulders, you want to play golf? Maybe it's time. So I've got the equipment in the basement just in case the Leafs need a third goalie in the playoffs. But I think that's where it stays.
Well, it does open you up next year when they have that e-bug that travels with each team.
Well, exactly.
You're available for that.
Maybe I've got a new career coming.
Yeah, you got that.
You'd get back on the road.
Yes. Oh, good shot, Johnny.
Well.
How hard has that been, really? And because I listen to you guys and we'll send texts every now and then. It sounds great. Like you guys do a fabulous job with it, because it is difficult not being in the rink and replicating that atmosphere. But for people that have never called a game off the tube, how difficult is that?
It is. And one of the reasons it is your point of view. The cameras are lower, right? Because they want to get more facial contact, I guess, for the lack of a better term, I guess. Whereas we are up high, usually in the press box. So you see the guys' backs and you see the numbers, but televised when it's lower, you don't. And so sometimes you're guessing. And if you're going to guess, sometimes it's better just to mention the team that has it until you can figure out who actually does have it. And, you know, the star players you recognize, but I'm sorry, a lot of the third and fourth liners on the Utah Mammoth, I have no idea who the hell has it. And you have to kind of, for the lack of a better term, BS your way around it a little bit until you do know. So it's a lot of here they come, there they go, and until you recognize who actually does have it. So it is a challenge. The replicating the enthusiasm and the atmosphere is probably as difficult as anything, because you have to be the energizer.
Right.
To do it. So it's different. It's sometimes frustrating. And if there are technical glitches, then it becomes really a problem. I mean, we had one game, the game was in Florida, and we saw the warm up and everything else. And then they locked a shot at the end of the rink, right at the back. So it was shooting down the arena. And we thought, okay, well, when the game starts, we'll get back to normal. Well, the game started, and that's what we had. So we had the white players were this big and the red players, and the whites were us. So I was, well, here they come. We've got it. No, they've got it. No, we've got it again. No, they've got it again. Now they've got
it.
Did
you tell your audience? Did you tell your audience that was that was going on?
Well, I had to. What?
Yeah.
We were. Yeah. So anyway, and the poor guys who were doing the engineering, after about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of this, they push a button. Now I have a horse race. So I started calling the horse race. And Johnny, you're old enough to know this. You know who I got in the horse race?
Northern
Beetlebum.
I thought you were going to say, "Who? Here they come and there they go. We're in the horse race."
Oh, no. Oh, and then they pushed another button. Now I have a soccer game, and I started calling the soccer game. Yeah, well. So then they finally got it fixed, and we got back on, and we were back on track. So that was as memorable a night as I've had trying to do it off a monitor. We all got it done. We got the score right. Everything was good.
That's the key. By the way, so the next, I got to come down. I'm coming down to Scotiabank. We'll sit down and have a coffee. So,
sounds like a plan.
What's your dream finish? How do you want your last call to go? If you could map it out and
he's already
finish
told us.
the way you want. But yeah, I want to know, does it finish in overtime? Does it finish game seven? Does it matter?
I mean, obviously, game seven, Stanley Cup winner, and it's not like the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
The goal,
yes.
The
Patrick Kane. Yeah.
Kane scores the goal, and no one knew it except him that it was in the net. If you're going to call a goal like that, you want to get it right, which is one of the reasons why I was so proud of the Nicky Borishevsky goal, because when they changed ends, that where we were, our point of view in the Joe Louis Arena was down in that end of the rink. Coley was at the other end. And right. I know he wasn't sure that Nicky had touched the puck after Bob Rouse had shot it. And he had to adjust his call accordingly. But I could see that Nicky touched it. And I knew it was his goal right away. And so when you get that opportunity, you want to, you know, celebrate that and do it right. So you would hope that if there is a game seven and it's overtime, you get the call right and enjoy that moment. We start the parade in Timmins and we work our way down Highway 11.
Right down Yonge Street, right?
Absolutely.
So you like your team then?
I like what Brad Treliving has done. And some of it, his hand has been forced, but all through what he has attempted to do is build a team more to the liking of the coach and the way the coach played. Brandon Carlo, huge addition on the defense, big body, big man. The defense corps is big and it's mean and it's tough. And the players that they have augmented now are very much playoff type players. And the addition of Scotty Lawton and Roy, all of these pieces are there. And everybody said, so how are you going to make up 100 points? Well, if you give up a half a goal a game less, there's 50 points. You don't have to worry about it, right? So it can all be done differently. And the other thing that I like is that we're talking about the Toronto Maple Leaf team now. We're not talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and the core four. It's now everyone. And if it's Austin Matthews who scores, fine. If it's a guy on the fourth line who scores, even better. So I think that getting that kind of atmosphere back in the mindset of the fan base, maybe the media base, but most importantly within the dressing room, that it's not, okay, those four guys over there got to do this. Well, what about me? Shouldn't I be doing something? So I think that I like that approach, and I like what they have done in that regard. And then they still have some dough in the bank to play with for maybe the first time ever at the trade deadline or going forward. So I'm the eternal optimist. If you're going to be a fan, you have to be. You're going to be pissed at them when they get out, but you get revved back up again. And we'll see how it goes. And I'm excited about this group.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate hanging out with you. And congratulations. Yeah. Great to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you, buddy. Good to see you. Enjoy. Yep.
Enjoy the season, Joe.
Thank you, Johnny. I will. I will for sure.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
I root for him to have one last run. I root even more that he's in the building for his last game.
Well, I would hope that, you know, that last post-Olympic run, if the Leafs are close, that our friends at Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, Keith Pelley, who's... a broadcast guy at heart, and the people at Rogers on the radio side have some compassion for him and put him on the road, and he and Jimmy can call Leaf games and playoff games, because I expect the Leafs to be in the playoffs, on the road. They've done it with the baseball team this year. They finally got the baseball guys traveling again, so we'll go from there. Hopefully it works.
Do you think the Leafs have a chance?
No. But I didn't want to break his heart. So I didn't want to break his heart.
So. Do you ever produce games for Joe?
Yeah. And well, when we launched Leafs TV, Joe was a big part of the success of Leafs TV. Joe did an amazing thing for us in hosting Maple Leaf Classics. And he's just a plethora of knowledge about the Maple Leafs and that whole thing. So it worked out. It worked out really well. He's a good man. He's a true Leaf fan and a true entertainer, and he fit the market perfectly.
He was himself, or is himself, on the air.
Yes,
right.
Like totally. Totally. And you would have to say, hey Joe, get back online, as people could understand from the conversation we have. Every once in a while, you had to tell Joe to stay in his lane. myself. It's good.
You've told me that before.
Yes, stay in your lane. We got to go.
Okay.
Have a good weekend.
We'll be back with more.
Hey, Billy Guerin on Monday.
Look forward to it on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Right on.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.